This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. If you designate your Thrivent Choice dollars to Issues Etc. online before October 31st, Thrivent will designate an additional $25 to Issues Etc. For more information on how you can designate funds to Lutheran Public Radio and give an additional $25 to LPR, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page at issuesetc.org.
Upanayanam, this is a rite of passage in the young man's life, usually between 8 and 16 years of life. Hinduism believes in not just one God, it believes in only God.
That's Dr. Siva Subramania speaking on PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly about a sacrament. That's what it's called in the news, a sacrament of Hinduism for young men, a rite of passage, a rebirth, if you will, that involves fire, involves water, and involves the invocation of a number of different Hindu gods. And we heard right there that Hinduism doesn't believe in only one God, it believes in only God. What does that mean, and how does that help us understand this Hindu sacrament called Upanayanam? Dr. Victor Raj joins us on this Tuesday afternoon, October the 29th, to answer some of those questions. He's mission professor at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, and he's author of the book, The Hindu Connection. Dr. Raj, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. This is a pleasure for me to be with you this time.
What does that mean from the Hindu perspective? They don't believe in only one God. They believe in only God. What does that mean?
It is deep in thought. It's philosophical. And I grew up among a Hindu-majority culture through my grade school into college years. And I was neighbor to Hindus, Muslims, Christians of all kinds and so on. And through college, I met personally with so many of my Hindu friends, and this is a challenge. My dad, a Lutheran school teacher, taught me that Hinduism is polytheistic and idolatrous. And that goes to some extent, which is practically the case. However, when you talk to people of educated class, and especially the Brahmins and so on, they will say exactly what this doctor has said through this video clip here. Todd, this may be too much for our audience, but America is able to take this. Hinduism is, but in the Western eyes, Hinduism is polytheistic, monotheistic, panentheistic, and you name it. It's all in there. The philosophy of Hinduism says it is monistic fundamentally. The overarching image that we non-Hindus have of Hinduism, that it is practically and philosophically and theologically polytheistic. And they will tell us, they will retort and say, you got to grow up, brother, in this knowledge of the unseen and unknowable. So the only God, God is a mystery. That's biblical for us Christians. For Christians, we have revealed God, and there's only one way to get to know him. His way of telling us who he is in Jesus Christ, God the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. That's a given for us. For Hindus and most other Eastern religions, it's a search for God. Ideally, they are talking about this only God, and they will not name it. If they name it, they will give like 330 million or so names to him. So it's a search from within. You are trying to attune yourself to the eternal self. And the video clip toward the end of said, in each of us, in each human being, there is an emanation. That we will know this as Gnostic. Okay, there is a spark of divinity in us. So what do we mean by the only God when we think of 6.5 billion people throughout the world? Hindus will call all these emanations of this one God. We will say manifestations in Hindu terms. This is what it is. So is that helping or is it even more confusing?
Well, I guess I'm trying to figure out where, because there, and here I'll just kind of employ a little philosophical language. There's monism, which believes that all is one and all is God.
Uh-huh.
That sounds a little bit like what you're describing there. But then there is also monotheism, which would say there's only one God, and he isn't everything. Everything isn't him, but it sounds like what the Hindu is saying is everything is God, and this God is only one, since everything mm-hmm. is only one, but yeah. There are many ways to know or many manifestations of this one thing. Is that close to it?
That is close to it, because the emanation and also the one God now manifest in many forms. Practically for us, at our level, monism is the best description of it. 7th century BC and 6th century AD, Hindu philosophers have debated the whole issue, and they have come with the typical argument. I cannot tell you who God is or what God is, but I will tell you what or who God is not. So the theory there is God is not two, God is not three, God is not five. So you make the math and say you have to agree God is one. That's the logic.
Now, you mentioned before that also the fundamental to Hindu belief is this spark of divinity that yes. is found within. How is that related to this? It's called a sacrament, Upanayanam, uh-huh. for young men, this right. rite of passage for young men. How is it related yes. to the spark of divinity?
It goes in multiple ways. It may be a bad analogy. It is very close to the bar mitzvah ceremony. I told my class today, they are now Hindu gurus who are now taking the title reverend for themselves. Is it an experiment for the 20th century? I think it is. So Hinduism, by its default mode, has four stages in life. The first is infancy, then you get to adulthood. And this 8 to 12, 16 years, as this person pointed out. By the way, the speaker here is a doctor in our Washington, D.C. area. So he knows what he's doing. He has founded the temple. That means he has put in enough money to invest in a temple facility, etc. So he is conscious of what he's doing. He's also aware of the audience he's addressing. So he is all prepared for this. So the four stages of life, in this case, if this is a initiation to school, education, etc., this is a second phase of life. He's preparing to face the challenges of life in the future with the support of the family and kith and kin, with a strong religious underpinning. So the video actually showed that it's a 2-day ceremony. The first day is cleansing and rites of passage and celebration with the family. The second day is the official thing. And when they do this, they put this white clothing on him, and also invoke the five spirits. Five elements is the better way to put it: earth, air, fire, water, and to my surprise, space is the fifth element. Earth, air, fire, water, space. So what is left there? Everything is symbolically included in this. And the family, the parents, the siblings, and the guru, the master, they're all literally laying hands on this person, 8 to 16 years of age. So he is invoking, the whole community is invoking all the elements symbolically. And with their physical presence there, all of them together laying hands upon him, they are accepting him as an adult or as a person who's growing up into adulthood as a member of the community. Education is the start of it. And in the Hindu way of thinking, you will know that you don't know as you grow in your education. So that's philosophy enough.
Now, it involves, as you mentioned before, the elements. One uh-huh. of them that seems prominent in the second day of that ceremony is water. And uh-huh. this water is somehow made sacred, and then it is used for purification rites. Someone might say, well, it seems to have some affinity with Christian baptism. How would you respond to that, Dr. Raj?
It is, as an element, it has a lot of similarity with Christian baptism. And may I go one step ahead and say, Sikh religion, the guys with the turban and the long beard and so on, traditionally, they have a baptism of the sword. So baptizo plays its cleansing symbolism in many religions, including primitive religions, because they actually sprinkle water as they enter the holy space in their language. They sprinkle water, they wash their hands and feet as they even go into a home. In the old tradition, if a high caste person happens to be in a, associating with a low caste person, before he enters his own home, he will go through this cleansing ceremony using water. And the other element that they pointed out is fire. Fire, this person says, which is true. In that vein of thinking, also has a purifying effect. And he even eulogizes fire with fancy words. And remember Pentecost, we have the tongues of fire appearing. These are symbols. But as much as we know, in Hinduism, the symbols either remain as symbols or they are deified, because they cannot really get to the stuff or the substance of God as he is. So these elements cause them to wander before the God they understand to be the ultimate.
Dr. Victor Raj is our guest. When we come back 10 more minutes with him, we're talking about the Hindu sacrament, a rite of passage for young men called Upanayanam. He's mission professor of New Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis and author of the book, The Hindu Connection. I invite your questions or your comments. We are coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, or send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Grace Lutheran, Henderson, Nevada. Faith Lutheran, Orange City, Iowa. Bethany Lutheran, Fairview Heights, Illinois. Bethlehem Lutheran, North Zulch, Texas. Risen Christ Lutheran, Arvada, Colorado. Trinity Lutheran and Grace Lutheran, Wichita, Kansas. Emmanuel Lutheran, Perryville, Missouri. Risen Savior Lutheran, Basar, Kansas. St. John Lutheran, Champaign, Illinois. Trinity Lutheran, Auburn, Nebraska. Holy Trinity Lutheran, Columbia, South Carolina, Grace Lutheran, Elgin, Texas, Gethsemane Lutheran, Marion, Ohio, and St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes a congregational sponsor, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.
Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Apostles Lutheran Church is in Melrose Park, Illinois. We invite you to our divine service, which is held every Sunday at 9:15. Please contact us at 847-455-0903 or check out our website at apostlesmelrosepark.org. We are located just south of O'Hare Airport, where airplanes are continually going up. Here at Apostles, we glory in the one who on the cross was lifted up for the sins of the world.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, coordinator for stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship. lcms.org/stewardship.
This ceremony is like a second birth. He is made into a twice born. So the first birth is from the womb of his mother, and the second birth is actually given the mantra from the father, so it is the second birth that comes to this boy. Hinduism strongly believes there is a spark of divinity within each one of us. This is a wonderful sacrament in his spiritual advancement.
Dr. Siva Subramania, speaking on PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly about the Hindu sacrament, a rite of passage for young men, Upanayanam. Dr. Victor Raj is our guest of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, author of the book, The Hindu Connection. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. If you have a question or a comment about this Hindu sacrament, Upanayanam, or general questions about Hinduism in general, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at @issuesetc. Dr. Raj, we heard there again in that piece of audio, not only the mention of the water and the rebirth, I want to get to that in a minute, but the mantra, the father gives as kind of the culmination of this rite of passage for the young man. The father gives the community gives this young man a mantra. What's a mantra?
A mantra is a mysterious sacred saying, usually uttered in Sanskrit, which is a sacred language of Hinduism. And I believe it is said into the ears of the, I hate to use this expression, confirmant, because they spread a white sheet over the candidate, and then the guru utters through the father into the ear of the young man a certain line, and I have no way of tracing what it actually sounds like. It could be a slogan, a line, like, for example, from the Upanishads, similar to our Proverbs. If we take the book Proverbs as wisdom sayings, it could be a line like that. I am trying to put a construction for this for the Christian audience. Something that relates in broad terms to the fourth commandment, shall we say. So your responsibility to the community, to the family, to your immediate relatives and the society, that'll be the theme which is reflected or summarized in one of these sayings in the Hindu scriptures.
Can a mantra also be simply a word upon which the devout Hindu will meditate?
Yes. It is usually given in Sanskrit. Sanskrit is the, as Dr. G, the sainted G would say, the Eastern Latin. And symbolically and metaphorically, that's the case. That is the sacred language. It is pretty much extinct, except in colleges, universities, and high schools as a piece of literature. But the bulk of the material that is committed to writing in Sanskrit is religious and liturgical for the Hindu religion. So it is that. It is that. The doctor mentioned this is a sacrament, and I will say two things about it. I will allow the positive comparison with this to our confirmation and say, when our children are confirmed, we give them a confirmation verse. So in that sense, this will be their confirmation verse, which they will memorize. They will try their best to heed as they grow up into adulthood and take responsibility as a husband and a father and a responsible citizen of the country. But I also, as I mentioned early on in the first segment, the word title reverent, which for me is sacred and Christian, is now popularly used for the leaders of Hinduism, gurus. I mean, you call people guru, and Hindus themselves will call those people reverend. So that's a cultural adaptation. And this family has lived in the D.C. area for some years, some decades, I'd like to think that's the case. And the second point is that I hear the word sacrament, but I am confident to say that they do not mean sacrament as the means of grace. It's a sacrament in the sense that it is a ritual. But the depth of the word sacrament for Christians, Bible-believing, Christ-following Christians, is completely different from what the meaning that is derived when Hindus use it. It's more on the rite of passage side, yeah.
Mike is listening in Kansas City. Mike, thanks for being patient.
Hi, Mike.
Yeah, thank you, Pastor Wilkin, and I wish people listening would consider Supporting Issues, et cetera. It's a great resource. And thank you for the topic, Dr. Raj. And I am a bit familiar with some Middle Eastern mysticism, if you will, if I can categorize what you're saying in that way.
Right.
And I was wondering if you had noticed a connection. I've clearly seen it myself in so many different with so many different examples in the American movement towards Pentecostalism and the charismatic movement, where they start out with decision theology. We have that spark within us, and then from there it really takes off into all sorts of mystical things that can mystically improve your life. Is there a connection there?
Well, from a sociological and in theological point of view, you are absolutely right. I say you are absolutely right, because how do the Pentecostals, although they are Christian brothers and sisters, how do they understand a sacrament? Or do they really know the grace of to use their language, experience the grace of God? If they think of experiencing God and His grace, they do this with fear. Yeah, so there is, on a certain plane, there is a lot of comparison. As you mentioned, Islam also has the mystic element to it. I can think of sacrament. I don't ever think, I have no resources to support any thinking that circumcision for them is a means of grace. It will still be a rite for them. So there are parallels at a certain level. But when we go deep into the theological depth of what the sacrament and the sacraments do for a child of God in Jesus Christ, no other religion can even come close to that. They can only look at the social, the sociological, even the moral and the ethical dimensions of it. By publicly calling somebody who is 8 years or older to a place and having this ceremony lasting 2 days done for him, he is now publicly displayed as a person who has, quote-unquote, come of age in his understanding of religion. And he has found a place in the community as somebody who is not a child anymore, but in the process of growing up to adulthood. So that's there. So there are levels. From a comparative religion point of view, there are a lot of parallels there. But theologically, and especially when we see this in the light of what a sacrament is for the Christian community, there are no parallels at all.
I wonder, the terminology used with regard to Upanayanam is twofold. It's rebirth, and then it's also spiritual advancement. Given what we've talked about in regarding Hinduism in general, mm-hmm. what would rebirth mean for the Hindu, and what would the ultimate goal of spiritual advancement be for Hinduism?
Todd, very good and very deep question. First of all, spiritual advancement for the learned Hindu is a process. It's an ongoing process. There is that ultimate goal to let go yourself as a human being, as the world knows you, the world around you knows you, and to discover yourself as we started out saying, as really an emanation from God, and get to that point, and once you get there, I don't have an image here, maybe something like a Sputnik, and when that happens, you're no longer here, but you're out there somewhere, unbeknownst to and unseen by the terrestrial human beings or any object under the sun. You're out there, gone away. That is one. And the other thing is, by the book, Twice Born, there are thousands of castes in India, still practically lived out experiences as sociological levels. But the key word here is twice born, and by the book, the Brahmins, who are, if you took a head count, they are not even 5% of the whole Hindu population throughout the world. Throughout the world, there are close to 1 billion Hindus, and shall we say 5 million are Brahmins. Brahmins are twice born. So the rebirth they are talking about is not the rebirth that Jesus discussed with Nicodemus. So that's a different category. There are no comparisons to that. They cannot be compared. So twice born means it actually builds in the whole cycle of birth and rebirth. My Todd, when we had issues, et cetera, whenever I guess before, I have said this before, I grew up with the shoots and ladder, or snake and ladder thing. And you are used to the shoots and ladder. That's old school, right? We are old. Hey, yeah. So you merit, you add to your merits one after the other, and then you go up almost on top at the 999 points, and suddenly a snake swallows you and brings you down. That's the recycling thing that's happening with your life. So that means good works measure you up to a certain point, and suddenly you do something bad, you do a mistake or two, some significant mistake, then you come down to ground zero. That's the situation. And that translates also in the social levels. So the twice born is the best you can go, from the lowest class, the Shudras, to the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas, the Kshatriyas, and to the Brahmins, who are the priestly ones. The ones who are born into the Brahmin caste are already twice born, technically, and practically a twice born experience is lived out in this Upanayana ceremony. They actually not only go through this water thing and the fire experience, but also they give you a kind of a cross belt thing. They put this thread around your chest. So that's symbolic of you having been gone through the Upanayana ceremony. That means you're already publicly known as a twice-born human being.
Dr. Victor Raj is Mission Professor of New Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, and he's author of the book, The Hindu Connection. Dr. Raj, thank you very much for being our guest.
You're so welcome, Todd.
Pastor Paul McCain will join us on the other side of the break. We'll kick off part three of our series on the formula of Concord in the Book of Concord. Today, we've come to the subject of free will, crucial to the survival of the Reformation. We'll find out why right after this. How would you like to win the Essential Lutheran Library, a set of 9 Reformation resources, including the Lutheran Study Bible, Lutheran Service Book, Luther's Catechism, Treasury of Daily Prayer, the Lutheran Book of Prayer, Reading the Psalms with Luther, Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions, Law and Gospel, and the Lutheran Difference? If you join or renew your membership in our monthly or annual giving program, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club, by Reformation Day, October 31st, you're eligible to win the Essential Lutheran Library. We'll announce the winner on All Saints Day, November the 1st. You can find out about the benefits and levels of the Issues Etc. Reformation Club at issuesetc.org. Look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses, or call Craig at 618-223-8385. Join or renew your membership in the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by Reformation Day, October the 31st.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Imagine steadfastlutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub, your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm, so check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.